They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
Greetings, greetings, fellow stargazers. This week on the Legion Clubhouse, we're going to keep looking up to the stars.
DC Special Series number 21, Superstar Holiday Special. Starlight, Star Bright, Farthest Star I See Tonight. Published spring 1980. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Synopsis: It's Christmas in the 30th century.
I don't know what to think about this this Christmas special. For those, we're just looking at the Legion Clubhouse story. We're not looking at the time Jonah Hex found God or the time that Batman saved a little baby that was in a manger all alone. None of that stuff. We're not covering any of those other stories. We're just looking at the time that Superman came to the 30th century looking for the meaning of Christmas.
I don't think he came looking for the meaning of Christmas.
First of all, why is he coming to the 30th century?
Right? Okay, so here's the deal. This is one of those things where when we put these together, I actually go to multiple sources to figure out where these stories take place. This one is kind of hard to place. Because
it takes place in December.
Right, but this is an editor's note that says it takes place before Superboy and the Legion 258. But it begins with a half-built Legion headquarters that was still in ruins in 260 at the point where the team said, we're going to rebuild. And then, of course, 261 was immediately after that. It was the space circus nonsense. So I looked at it, and there were three different thoughts on where this went. And I said, okay, we're just going to ignore that editor's note. This is a story that takes place here, even though it completely steps on Superboy's big dramatic exit, because otherwise it doesn't make sense story-wise. And I feel like I'd rather ruin drama than try and, you know, jump up and down and make continuity fit. So, yeah, this could be anywhere in the last five issues, but nonetheless, it's future Christmas.
It's good future to Christmas. See that Christianity has spread itself far and wide. It's also kind of scary that it's spread itself across the universe like some kind of crazy plague. Meanwhile, our Jewish friend over here.
Yeah. Another big cool thing that happens in this, really, other than the whole
Judeo-Christian, let's scare everybody.
Let's take our weird backwards friend from 1957 out and let him play in the universe. This is the issue that confirms, after literally years of fan speculation, that Colossal Boy was in fact raised Jewish. And I guess the main reason for this, and the only reason that I can find behind this theory, is that Allen, spelled A-L-L-O-N, is a common Hebrew surname. But, you know, if you look back at the point when the Legion was starting, I don't guarantee a lot, but I think I will go out on a limb and say that they did not intend for the character to read as Jewish or for the name to be Hebrew. They were just going for, future spelling. But it's nice to see, you know, Levitz taking that bit of, you know, fan continuity and actually bringing it into the book, which I think is really pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a whole lot of problems with this when it's just like, hey, even these weird aliens believe in Jesus Christ. That is so problematic on so many levels, especially when you look at how religion has spread across the world. Basically every religion has done this, where they will force the religion upon a local, quote unquote, dumb local tribe to enforce their will and to bring those belief systems in. And that just to couch that into, you know, the fact that, you know, the whole universe believes has these Christian faiths. And oh, by the way, here's our Jewish friend. That also is very much a slap in the face, because it's like there's no other religions out there in the universe.
Yep, there's one Jewish guy in the entire universe, and then everybody else is either Christian or, weirdly, Karate Kid seems to be celebrating Aluminum Christmas Tree Day like they did in the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
Yeah, he's the only one that's doing like a tea ceremony, which is not necessarily religious-based, yeah. nor is it related to Christmas. Now, I will note that... you know, DC slipped in Steve Rogers' shield on top of the Christmas tree in that scene. So, you know, good on them.
It's interesting to me, though, that the Legionnaires that we choose for this story aren't even the ones from Earth. You know, because Karate Kid and Sun Boy, we see them having a holiday celebration together, mm-hmm. but they don't make necessarily natural sense. If you look at, you know, Wildfire is from Earth, but everybody else, the other Legionnaires in this story, are all from other planets. And it really does feel like the Legion started with teenagers mocking each other. And I feel like this is a let's pat him on the head and take him out on a snipe hunt kind of storyline where they're like, oh, sure, we're going to go look for the Star of Bethlehem. And Superboy's like, yeah! And the Legionnaires are like, sure! Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, I like the Superboy going full Kirk on that same page where we find out that Colossal Boy is Jewish, where he's like, his hand is clenched and he's looking up the stars. I'd trade all your star-spanning futuristic technology for a little tizzy. Just full-on Captain Kirk right there.
I'd give all your star-spanning technology for a little bit of pencil right now.
And then somehow they go to a dying planet, and instead of rescuing the people off the planet, they teach them how to work together so that they're all living in a cave together, because that's how different societies are just going to work together, I guess. I don't know.
Cooperation in the face of annihilation does make sense. You know, it's like they say, if you build a man a fire, he'll be warm for a day. If you light a man on fire, he'll be warm for the rest of his life. And I feel like, you know, what this was kind of it was designed to try and be a almost, but not quite. And you're going to laugh at me when I say this. They were trying for a non-secular message there for a second. Because
at which second? The very last page when they bring a Christmas tree onto this dying planet?
The thing that's interesting is, you know, the story isn't about Christianity or, you know, Jesus or about any of the iconography of the Christian faith. The story is about these heroes wandering into a doomed world, and these three, you know, peoples, these three populations learning and agreeing to work together with the help of the Legionnaires. You know, it's about working together and cooperating and making a better world. And that, at least, doesn't necessarily drive directly. It is not a uniquely Christian phenomenon, but I do agree with you that it's very, very odd. First of all, for there to be religion in a Legion story is weird. After 30 years worth of stories, I can't think of maybe a handful of times when things like this have even come up. I mean, Karate Kid at one point, I think, referenced something about his Japanese heritage and maybe touched on the idea of Shintoism, but I can't remember there being a heavily ritualistic or you know, an actual religious Legion story. Can you?
Not that we have read yet. And I think it is probably... So here's the problem. This is why I laugh at all this. And I'm not making, you know, if somebody's out there who's Christian and takes offense, I don't mean to laugh at your religion. I find all religions somewhat ridiculous. But to force this idea that Christianity is so popular that it has spread throughout the systems and that all the members of the Legion of Superheroes have understand what Christianity is and these kinds of things and the meaning of Christmas, that seems far-fetched, especially when we look at the fact that, you know, there's, you know, we can at least say that there's at least three major religions on this planet, and how, you know, how come there's not a planet just full of Muslim people? How come there's not a whole planet where everybody is Jewish? Why does it just have to be one person? I understand this is a Christmas book, and the whole point about Christmas is to celebrate great Christian or Christian traditions or Wiccan traditions that have been absconded by Christianity and forced into your belief system. I can get all of that stuff. It just feels weird and out of place. And even when, I mean, man, that Sergeant Rock story that's ahead of this one is just truly bizarre and truly unnerving. Here we're killing everyone and we're destroying everything, yet the statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary, we must save at all cost. And then, of course, the light in the sky points the way to world peace. And it's like, no, God, it's just, it just feels forced and hackneyed. And it feels like you're pushing your religion on readers who may not be of that faith. And I find that offensive, but at the same time, I understand that a lot of people just go ahead and accept what those crazy Christians are doing every year. I guess we'll celebrate Christmas too. Pardon me, have you heard of a thing called Hanukkah? You know, it's just, I don't know. This whole book sits wrong with me.
You know, the funny part about pushing their religion, both the writer of the Sergeant Rock story and the Legion story are in fact Jewish.
I know. And that makes it even more weird, right?
Robert Koeniger and Paul Levitz. But I think that here's the thing, and I will tell you the truth. This is the second or third time that we've broken out of Legion main titles to see them in a big crossover nonsense story.
Yeah.
There was the disaster issue, and I think there was the origin of the Legion popped up in another one. And this, I think, is the best and most memorable for one reason and one reason only. And that reason is Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. This is a super goofy story that is the best the Legion has looked in forever. This is utterly beautiful from every single page. So what I think you should do is take it into Photoshop, just erase all the word balloons, and just look at the pretty pictures and go, oh, wow. Because this is one of those stories that the only reason it keeps getting reprinted, the only reason, is because it looks so good.
Does this get reprinted a lot in other places? Because I don't. Yeah, this is the first time I've ever seen this one, and it's probably the last time I'll ever look at this one.
Probably. You have to understand that my idea of comic book recent means since Deadpool, so probably the last 20 years. But there was a Christmas with a Superhero special that reprinted this, and I want to say that this material is it in. If it's not in that latest Superboy and the Legion collection, it's going to be the next one, I think. I don't even remember. I read the original issues. But yeah, it's been reprinted like four different times because Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
I mean, yeah, you're right. As when you're looking at artists and you're looking at stuff that they have done, yeah, this does look really good. And, you know, we're quickly approaching 1986 where he has to draw everybody in the entire DC universe. but we really don't get to see much of his Legion work anywhere. So for fans of Legion, you do get some of that here.
I think this is Lopez's only Legion story.
Say for, well, I mean, I shouldn't say Legion appearance because like I said, with Crisis, he had to do all that stuff too.
That's George Perez.
Oh, sorry, George Perez. Sorry. Got those.
Yeah, this is, Garcia Lopez. He's the gentleman who, if you go out and you see all of the DC, their fabrics,
models,
and their lunch
model sheets and everything.
Their model sheets.
Yeah. That stuff is still so popular that it's still being used today for greeting cards and birthday cards and wrapping paper and clothing apparel and all of that stuff. And this is, you know, his model sheets, the one that everyone points to, and we've got links to him on the Major Spoiler site as well. Those are from, I want to say, either 76, sometime between 76 and 80 is when he did those.
From the late 70s.
Yeah, that's when he did those. And so when my boys were born, one of them almost 15 years ago, we decided to do their rooms in superhero theme. So my oldest son, we did his in a Superman theme, and my youngest son, we did his in Batman theme. And so we bought these big, like, decals that you stick on the wall. They're, like, almost life-size. Superman and life-size Batman, and you stick them on the wall. And it is the Jose Garcia Lopez art that is still part of this. And this is stuff that we just bought within the last, like I said, 15 years. And it's still, like I said, still being used all over the place. So when you're looking at, you know, artists who have a lasting impact on comic book as an art medium, Garcia Lopez is definitely one of those.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And then Alex Ross would be the other one, Matthew. You're welcome.
Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Absolutely.
So I don't know what to think of this story. I'm not a fan of it. I think it's rather redonkulous because, you know, he's trying to go out and find the star that led the kings to Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
There's pretty good evidence in the science community that if, you know, however many years ago, 3,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago or 7 weeks ago, whenever the universe was created, when those kings were supposedly traveling to see the newborn babe and they were following this light in the sky, scientists generally believe that that was probably a supernova of some kind that was leading their way, because that would have been something that could have been very bright in the sky, both day and night. And it would have only lasted a short period of time, because when a star goes supernova, we see that explosion for, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe a month, and then it will eventually, and maybe a year if it is that big of an explosion, but it eventually dies down fairly quickly. So Superboy, with his, what is he, a 10th level intellect to Brainiac 5's 12th level intellect, you would think a 10th level intellect, even in high school form, would understand that a supernova is not going to last 3,000 years into the future. If anything, he should have traveled back into the past. Yeah.
Cause when we started reading this, my brain was like, didn't they go back in time? And no, they didn't. It starts with Superboy going forward in time.
Yeah.
So yeah,
there was I can't remember if it was an Amazing Stories or one of the new Twilight Zone episodes where these scientists out in space also stumble upon a space station where everything is dead and they're at the remnants of a supernova. And then by decoding the alien language and everything, they realize, oh, this star went supernova so many years ago, light traveling at the right speed, that would have appeared just at the time that we traditionally say that Jesus Christ was born. So, you know, that kind of stuff is balanced, that jumps between science fiction and reality a lot. But here it just doesn't work, because it's like, yes, let's humor this Kryptonian trying to find a star that blew up a long time ago. And we stumble upon something else completely different. I don't know. It's just not a good story.
Yeah, it's really not. And, you know, it's kind of a shame, but it's also one of those things where we're kind of at a point where we're just about to the end of the expectation of quote unquote disposable comics entertainment, where continuity isn't really a big deal and you just tell a cute story and then you're done with it.
Yeah.
But 1980 is a little late for, first of all, this concept. You know, this feels like very retro. This feels like something that we'd have seen maybe half a decade earlier.
To do a Christmas thing?
To do the whole Christmas special,
well,
to have it be, you know,
Superboy
and the Legion dealing with future Christmas. I mean, don't get me wrong, DC does Christmas specials now.
But. Yeah, they do. That's what I was going to say, is they do specials now. And there are some really great stories, like the time that Batman met Santa Claus.
Right. Or the time that Supergirl was dead, but also wasn't dead. And she met Deadman, who was dead.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because Deadman's always dead. That's why they call him Deadman.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are some definitely times where DC gets into the holiday stuff, and Marvel probably too. I don't care if somebody wants to do a holiday book.
Right.
But unfortunately in America, Christianity seems to be that heavy major religion that everybody's into.
Mm-hmm.
But it still feels off. If you were to share this with other countries and they were to look at this, they'd probably, you know, they would definitely understand what Christmas is, but then they might also question, well, what about all the other religions that have these celebrations? Why aren't you doing things with those? And who knows, maybe they are. Let us know, India, what DC Comics is doing over there. Let us know, China, what DC Comics is doing over there. So I don't know, man, it's,
The Legion exists at a weird, in the center of a weird diagram of science fiction and superheroes. And to add in, you know, a third circle of Christianity just, throws everything kind of out of whack. But, I'll forgive it because Wildfire looks amazing.
Yeah, that's not so. We've got another book to get to, so don't get too excited just yet.
Aww.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
So Christmas time, Matthew, end of the year, or at least once a year, comic book publishers, at least back in the day, were required to submit their circulation numbers so they could get charged for their postage for the coming year, their bulk rate postage.
Yep.
So what do we got this time? It's not in the DC special series because that's a special series, but in the main Legion book itself in 262, we get that at the end of the book.
Yep, the date of filing, October 1st, 1979, frequency of issue monthly. So the average number of copies during the preceding 12 months, so 1978 into 1979, Legion of Superheroes printed 322,106 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual number of copies of the issue nearest to this circulation statement, which again is going to be a few months before, so it would be, you know, for October of 79. So it's going to be one of the issues that we saw a few issues ago, 343,700 and some change. So almost 350,000 copies of Legion of Superheroes were printed. And 2,474 of them were subscription through the mail, which I don't know if that's high or low, but it feels high.
What was the number for this subscription?
2,474. So about...
Oh, that's not very much.
No, but the mail subscriptions in the day were not your primary way of getting your books.
No, not at this point, no. They did try that for a while, and I knew many kids when I was growing up who had a comic book subscription. And of course, Skrull Brian will tell stories about suddenly in the middle of a storyline, he'll get another book because they either cancel the book or something like that.
Right.
But even then, 1% seems rather low.
Well, and 343 is the number of issues printed. I'm not sure. Let me double check and see how many were actually returned.
Oh, do they also include the returns in there?
Yeah, they list returns. Extended nature of circulation. Total number of copies printed, bibbidi-bibbidi-boo, 343,000. Average number of copies, bibbidi-bibbidi-boo. Average number of copies, single issue. This is fun to read. I'm sure this is fascinating to listen to. Returned copies for the nearest single issue published to the date, 137,428.
Wow, so almost a third. So 1% subscriptions, a third of the comics returned, and then probably from some crazy gangster thing that was going on back in the time where they were literally like records. They were pumping up the records and then dumping them in the river so that they could inflate the sales. Although you would think that for mailing, for mailing purposes, you would probably want to keep those numbers low so you're not paying as much. Or maybe because you circulate more, your numbers go down. I don't remember how that works. Right. But there you go, ladies and gentlemen, 343,727. Do keep in mind that even continues today. So if you're seeing sales figures from companies like Diamond and they're saying, hey, this comic, Superman Action Comics, whatever, we shipped, 200,000 of those. That's how many were shipped to the stores. That's not how many. That's not the representation of the actual purchases by little boys and girls handing over their nickels and buying 24 pages of entertainment.
Legion of Superheroes number 262, The Planet That Captured the Legion. Published April 1980. Written by Jerry Conway with art by James Sherman. Synopsis: the search for RJ Brand's lost fortune leads to space pirates.
I should have listened to our fans who are constantly over on Twitter letting us know what's coming up, because they said, oh, Steven, you guys are about to hit issue 262. And oh boy, you better watch out. Now, little had they known that we were going to do that DC special series, I should have probably by the prickling of my thumbs, something horrible this way comes, because oh boy, we got a pair of stinkos this month or this week in the Legion Clubhouse.
This is not the worst Legion of Superheroes story ever written. However, it places in my bottom five.
So, and, yeah. So this issue opens up with some Legion members, not the ones who went to the one place and then to the circus. And these are the ones that were left behind at the Legion headquarters. And they're just deciding that they can't wait for the government to come around and fix their building. So they're going to do it themselves. And a telepath and a guy that has that got swallowed by a space whale and, you know, some other people that have these powers. I really have a feeling that none of them have any kind of structural engineering capabilities, and that what we're going to end up with is a Legion of Superheroes headquarters that's very much akin to the Little Rascals Clubhouse, where it's just like, you know, a refrigerator door leaning up against here, and then open sewage system over here, and then as what happens is you've got Ultra Boy holding up a wall, and then it just collapses because, you know, they're not following code. These guys, this is the team that is the team that should not be building buildings in this case.
Far be it from me to defend Wildfire, but he is in fact an engineer.
Now, yeah, but a train engineer, that's not a construction engineer.
No, you're thinking of Alan Scott, the Green Lantern. No, Wildfire is a nuclear engineer, which makes him like a double secret engineer probation. But yeah, I have to admit, I like the idea of Light Lass on a construction crew.
Oh yeah, she would make things easy to move.
Right. But you know, you notice that when the wall starts to fall, she doesn't make it lighter. She's like standing there. And she goes to try and get it, and the wall collapses anyway. And I'm like, well, dang.
Yeah.
Huh. You know, that's kind of a failure moment. Maybe, and of course,
maybe somebody should make sure before they write a story, Jerry Conway, that you know how all these hero powers work.
Oh, no, it gets better.
Oh, yeah, it gets better.
This is also the issue that people like to point out, that Jerry Conway has Light Lass and Ultra Boy kind of canoodling.
Oh, they're just play flirting, right? He's like, I know you got a boyfriend and I know I got a girlfriend, but you saved me, even though you really didn't. How about I give you a little peck on the cheek? And she's like, okay.
Yeah. I thought it was really kind of sweet. It was really neat, and it, you know, it was cute, and it seems age appropriate for kids in their early 20s.
I
lived in a co-ed dorm.
No. Remember, these kids are like in their early 50s.
Oh, stop it. That story is no longer canon.
Is it? Also your favorite costume is back, Matthew.
My favorite costume?
Yeah, remember how the last issue you said it was great looking? Welcome to this issue. I don't know. So we've never really talked about how he talks. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that thing on top of his head is now a speaker system of some kind.
Either that, or it's some ductwork so that, you know, John McClane can crawl through, since it is Christmas, to save his ex-wife. Because I will say this, it's been a while since we've seen James Sherman.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever seen Sherman inking himself on Legion before.
Yeah.
But this Wildfire helmet looks just kind of wow.
A little silly.
He looks like the thing that I look at from the very
first day. He looks like a Cyberman.
Yeah. But from the very first page, I mean, if you look at the cover and you look at it, it looks like Ernie Colone, who I remember as drawing Richie Rich in the 80s. This feels like the Legion as done by the Harvey Comics Richie Rich team. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but boy, it makes Wildfire look freaky. I mean, Light Lass looks cute as heck. I don't think Light Lass has looked this good since Kurt Swan left the book. And that was like 1967.
I think it's because of the way that they draw. Everybody's hair is very full of Prel.
Yeah.
Because everybody's hair is very light and fluffy. Hair. Yeah, everybody's got the fair hair. I mean, look at Lightning Lad, for example. Yeah. I mean, he's going full-on himbo with his hair.
Lightning Lad has just full-on Farrah Fawcett hair. And
yeah,
that's fine. For, you know, in profile, I'm wondering if he thinks that Wildfire has a fin on his head like the Crimson Avenger.
Well, isn't that how it was in the last issue? I'm pretty sure that that's how they've drawn his
No, his thing has always been very, very, very low-key Mr. T
Mohawk. Well, the Mohawk was really starting to become in fashion here, so maybe that's what he's got going on, is a big old plastic styrene Mohawk. Hey, we need to go and see what our other adventuring party is doing. They're with RJ Brand. You may remember them. They went off into space to help RJ Brand restart his Star Factory. And so we get to go into space. And I kind of like the way that, and I don't know if this is just Sherman or others who are doing this, but we get this kind of almost traced rheostat kind of high tech mechanical look to stuff. But then when you print it on with the comic book colors and pages, it just gets this really weird kind of techno look to it, which I kind of dig that kind of, and I know that's an artifact of printing, but,
sure, but it looks very futuristic.
Oh, you know what it looks like?
What's that?
RJ Brand's starship looks like a planetarium projector. So if you go and look up a planetarium projector, look for the ones that have the bubble lenses on each end with a connector in the middle, and it looks exactly like this Star Maker thing.
Yeah. Now on page 4, we do get a bit of extended exposition from Lightning Lad, and I'm really torn because on the one hand I look at this and I'm like, my God, it's, you know, a wall of text, but I'm also like, we're looking at a team with 25 members, and Lightning Lad is like, oh dear, Cosmic Boy, Shrinking Violet, Dream Girl, Karate Kid, Colossal Boy, and Chameleon Boy flew off with our benefactor, Rene Brand, to help him find his lost fortune. Ha ha ha. And I'm like, is that bad exposition or is it really compact expedition?
So this issue is cover dated April 1980, and last time we did a February and March. So this is being released monthly. So it may seem like overkill for an issue that comes out monthly. However, last issue, the March issue, we were doing that Circus of Death thing.
Right. We haven't seen the brand.
Yeah, so we haven't seen Superboy this team then. Since probably December. Yeah, January, December. So, I think it does need some kind of meanwhile. Here's where a bunch of other people are at.
Right. And again, I mean, don't get me wrong, it does the job.
Oh, sure.
And I feel like, you know, it's an example of that. Well, as you know, Saturn Girl, my wife, who got married to me in all new collector's edition C-55, you know, but it also is one of those moments where we have three teams of Legionnaires and 20 active members. And to some degree, it feels like a really good use of space, even though it is a massive wall of text, and a good way to transition us out to the space team in space, which actually identifies itself as space.
I know, and they even throw in another Star Trek reference. They say at one time it may have been termed the final frontier. So they are definitely digging on some Star Trek stuff, but we also get a little science stuff going on in here. RJ Brand's ship, what it does is it accelerates the collection of the gases and the compression of the gases to form a star. And so, you know, that's some real science stuff right there and how stars are formed.
And then he sticks a rocket on it and flies the star across space to where he wants it to go.
Yeah. So the problem is
that's not how stars work.
Well, okay. So depends on what you mean by how stars work. So stars are super massive, and these boosters that they have put on the booster that they have put on the sun says that it can push 3 Jupiters, which still wouldn't be enough to push a sun.
No.
Because the sun here, our sun, the sun, can hold somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 Jupiters.
So maybe this is a very small star.
Well, and so that's the next thing. Cause when you look at it, it could be a smallish star. I doubt that it's going to grow any bigger. Now, stars do have to have a certain size and mass if they're going to survive, you know, billions upon billions of years. If it's too small, it won't ignite. It'll be a brown dwarf and just won't do anything. I mean, many people believe that Jupiter is a failed star because it didn't reach critical mass to ignite.
Hmm.
So that part doesn't work. As far as stars just flying willy-nilly through the universe,
woo,
there are stars that are called intergalactic stars that are not really part of or don't follow along with the trajectory of a galactic cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And scientists wonder, too, that when we look at these rogue stars or intergalactic stars, mm-hmm, that these may have been stars that got thrown out of their galactic cluster because of gravity from another galaxy. They may think that as galaxies collide, like the Andromeda Galaxy and the Milky Way Galaxy are in the process of colliding now, that the mass of a bigger galaxy on a smaller galaxy will cause some stars to fly out and just go off on their own. So, you know, this idea of moving a star from one place to another, when you think about the rogue star, the intergalactic star, kind of does make a little sense. But one booster rocket pushing a star is not going to cut it. It's great for a visual, and it's really neat and kind of a cool concept and idea that we can create stars and then move them into place.
Mm-hmm.
I originally, when I got to the page where they're like, start the countdown and, you know, ignite, I thought
four,
that they were
3, 2, 1.
I thought that they were actually in the system where they wanted the star created.
Hold the star. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's, and when you say, hey, we're doing, I mean, now granted, there are star factories out in the universe right now. You can go look at the Orion Nebula. You can go and look at the Eagle Nebula with the Pillars of Creation. And those are places where stars are currently being formed. And then because of, especially in the Orion Nebula, the trapezium, mm-hmm, that cluster of four massive stars are actually pushing some of the little stars away. So, I mean, there's those kinds of things, but man, this idea of we're just going to go out into an area of space that has a lot of galactic dust and hydrogen, and we're just going to force the creation of a star and then move it into place. Whoo, man, you better have some good computational physics going on there, because you're going to disrupt a whole lot of systems as you move that thing through space. But then again,
we also have a Mon-El or a Superboy to do that by hand.
Yeah, but again, we also live in a universe where there's something that is even bigger than suns roving around like giant cows eating these things up. So, you know, science fiction. Meanwhile, we get to the place where the planet is supposed to be, and there's billions upon billions of floating bodies out in space.
Because their star just tore the planet apart with its gravitational force.
I thought it was because of the space pirates that suddenly show up.
We're whalers on the moon. We're whalers on the moon.
And not just, so don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen who are listening to this who have never read this story. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about, like, space pirates in a spaceship. We're literally
talking about... They are coming.
Yeah, they are coming. We're literally talking about space pirates on a Spanish galleon flying through space and attacking our heroes.
Pirates of the something spacey that rhymes with Caribbean.
Yes, which is very important for the big revelation coming up in this issue.
Yeah, and they are literally ships. They are ships.
Just like Long John Silver.
Yep. The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
Santa Clarita, and
they come attacking, and although there is something interesting in this issue, and I can't remember, I feel like I've said, hey, is this the first time we've seen the trans suits before? But we see them putting on their outer space mm-hmm. trans suits
mm-hmm.
to go into space, which is interesting, to fight, you know, literal guys with cutlasses and peg legs and flintlock muskets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's great because it gives Karate Kid something to do.
I mean, in the weightlessness of space, I suppose, maybe.
Well,
I don't know.
Karate Kid, you know, he's a master of all forms of combat, including pirate punching.
I guess. So
he's punching pirates.
But then something, massive explosion, which knocks everyone out until they find themselves in the star chamber, waking up from unconsciousness. And we see that all of the Legionnaires have been strapped to a wheel of death. And they're all naked.
Naked. I know. It is
even RJ Brand naked.
You know, if I needed to see an old fat man naked, I've got mirrors.
Apparently, this isn't a wheel of death. It's a UV desanitizer. So they spin them in high cycle to get them all scrubbed clean, and then they're allowed to put their clothes on, which again, kind of creepy, kind of weird. I mean, the women are all, I mean, everybody is topless, I guess. But everybody's wearing like boxers, except for RJ Brandt, who appears to go without wearing anything.
It looks to me,
you're not going to see any ding dang doodles.
No, but it looks to me like Sherman drew it in such a way that, you know, it was, you know, to obscure the fact that they were naked, but somebody drew in some tidy whities.
Yeah.
If you look at Shrinking Violet putting on her costume,
yeah, she's not wearing anything.
She's not wearing anything. And she's very tiny in the panel before, but she's doing the classic Venus covering her nudity pose.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, that's a lot of naked Legionnaires, Jim Sherman.
And then Metron appears, only it's not Metron. It's just a skeleton on a floating chair.
It's the skeleton of Metron wearing Galactus's hat on a floating chair that looks like he stole it from Archie Bunker. And he's dead.
He's dead, and he has been for over 350,000 years, 253 years and 37 days.
Which also feels like a very Star Trek, the original series premise.
Yeah.
You know, the planet that's automated and the people died and the planet just keeps going. Oh, and
No. Let's make sure that we get this correct. The name of the planet is, it's a fantasy world that this fantasy world planet would pass through a star system looking for ways to entertain people. So we find out that these pirates and all of these other things are all part of an amusement attraction that goes from system to system to entertain people. But when
visiting
the master
small worlds, after all,
yes, but when the master died and they had to cryogenically freeze his head, the system started working on its own. And instead of entertaining people, it started destroying worlds instead of entertaining worlds. And now that the Legion have shown up, they can put a stop to this dreadful planet by, you know, by Chameleon Boy taking on the visage of their pencil thinned mustached leader who just commands them to stop, at which point the whole fantasy world blows up.
Just tells the computer to compute the value
stop.
Of pi.
Yeah. It just says stop, and it does, and it blows up. Okay, but here's the thing, all right?
Yes.
You think that this is weird that the leader is a guy with a pencil-thin mustache who creates a fantasy world of entertainment, and you've got animatronic robots. If you look at the throne when it's coming in, if you look behind the head, there's a hidden Mickey. This is a dig on Disney World, and the fantasy world itself, as it's rocketing away and the planet is blowing up when they're doing all their flashback stuff, kind of looks like a geodesic dome, right? Which
Epcot.
Interestingly, yes, in 78 Epcot was announced, and it wasn't until 82, somewhere around there where Epcot Center finally opened. But the publicity for Spaceship Earth was a big deal leading up to the opening of Epcot Center. So this feels like a very non-hidden swipe at Walt Disney, who, you know, number one, was anti-union, also anti-Semitic. But just somebody who, it just seems like a dig on Disney and the Florida projects.
Oh, absolutely. And it's weird because you have all this setup of, oh, do you see this? And do you see the robot mice? Do you see all these things happening? And then we get to the last page and like, okay, now it's done.
Yeah, it wraps up very quickly.
They spent so much time with the setup that literally he forgot to give himself time to end it. And I feel like this is, you know, this is one of those Jerry Conway things where we've invested so much time and energy into this concept that doesn't necessarily make it to, you know, the page. Oh, my God, you're right. That is a hidden Mickey. I never noticed that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Right? And I feel like this is such a weird issue. I mean, it's an incredibly memorable cover. It's one of the first Legion covers that I remember noticing and going, yeah, what's this?
Yeah, it's got Galactus on the cover.
I'll tell you this. I have read a ton of comics in my time, and we were going through this. You know, we read these again as we go through to do Legion Clubhouse. I didn't remember this comic. I know I've had to have read it several times, 3, 4, maybe even 5 or 6 times. Did not remember a shred of this nonsense. And I think that, you know, for a nerd like me, may be the biggest damnation I can give this issue.
Well, certainly a lot.
Nothing here memorable.
No, I mean, there really isn't, except for the swipe on Disney. Except, and here's where the thing that I kind of like, as we said, we spent the last two issues dealing with a third of the Legion doing circus shenanigans. Then right. We get to this issue where we get to see RJ Brandon Company in space doing, you know, Star Trek stuff, which is cool. And then we have another third of the team that is on Earth trying to rebuild. So depending on how they want to do things, and we're getting to a point here in our Legion reading where Paul Levitz just comes on, or I'm sorry, Jerry Conway now is mm-hmm. pretty much the writer going forward from
while,
this. Yeah, for quite a while. And so it would be okay by me if I was thinking this through, and we've talked about this before, why aren't we covering these Legionnaires, or why does this Legionnaire group disappear? We now have the team split into roughly 10 or so in each group. Let's right. spend 2 issues with RJ Brand and friends doing Star Trek. Now let's spend 2 issues doing the people that are doing Mystery in Space. And then another 2 issues of here are people at the home planet doing home planet stuff, home planet heroing. And then that way you would be able to cycle through everybody, still keep all of the Legion there, but divvy them up so that you can do different things with them. Now, the drawback is RJ Brand's Star Trek. That's that team. It's not like you can just say, oh, Cosmic Boy's not here because he's back on Earth. No, Cosmic Boy is here because he can't go anywhere else. They're building stars. So that mm-hmm. that's kind of the main drawback, I think, to breaking them up that way. But at the same time, I think it allows you to tell stories with all the Legionnaires, except for Tyrock. Where's Tyrock? Nobody asks where Tyrock is anymore. You know, you are able to tell stories with Legionnaires and keep them in a rotation, as opposed to telling 6 stories of Shrinking Violet and Dream Girl going off on their adventures, where you get nobody else except for those two. So I think that might be a pretty good compromise. I'm going to guess they decide not to do that going forward, though.
I don't know. I mean, Conway does like to break the team up, and we see 4s and 5s and, you know, bits and pieces here and there. And, you know, every writer has their little fave raves. And I feel like this is the first that in a while that we've had Lightning Lad repeatedly in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen long periods of, hey, where's Lightning Lad? He's off with Tyrock.
So, oh, by the way, Tyrock comes in next episode.
Does he?
He does.
Oh, boy. I love Tyrock. He's awesome. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. I feel like having the small teams, if we're honestly going to, you know, moving back and forth and addressing each small team,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't actually happen.
No, it doesn't actually happen, unfortunately.
But, you know, if that were the plan and it were executed correctly, I'd be down for it.
Yeah. But unfortunately, if you follow the Legion Clubhouse on Twitter, which you should, it's Legion Clubhouse is the Twitter handle. A lot of people at Legion Clubhouse.
Club.
People were letting us know, oh, 262 is a real winner. And they put the real winner in quotation marks. So, you know, they were being sarcastic, because that's how sarcasm works on the internet. That or is hashtag,
oh, right. Yeah, we have sarcasm.
Yeah, in sarcasm. So, yeah, not a great pair of issues this week. Which means we've come to the end of another Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out. Matthew, what did we learn this time?
We learned that Shadowlust seems to have completely given up her cape.
We also learned how stars are made and moved.
And we learned that in the 30th century Zeniot, you no longer need a kippah, but apparently your Colossal Boy costume is perfectly fine.
That wraps it up for this installment. Thank you so much. If you enjoy this show and our discussions and our shenanigans, please go to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Sign up for $1 a month, $2 a month. Every little bit helps. The more of you that we can get on board, the more good things that we can do with this show and many of the other things that we do at Major Spoilers. So until next time, I'm keep looking at the stars, man.
And I'm kissing your girlfriend, kid.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.